From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Is the water that comes out of your tap safe to drink? Until June of 2017, most residents in the Cape Fear region assumed the answer to that question was yes. Then the Star News broke the Gen X story. Part of the PFAS family, Gen X is a toxic chemical compound that can only be removed from water using special treatment methods, such as reverse osmosis or granular activated carbon filtration. Local water treatment plants did not, and as of February 2020, still do not have that technology. Now, on both sides of the river, utilities plan to spend tens of millions of dollars on water filtration systems. The Cape Fear Public Utility Authority has chosen granulated activated carbon. In Brunswick County, it's reverse osmosis. WHQR's Vince Winkle reports both technologies come with a hefty price tag.
The utility is building a granular activated carbon facility. It will measure some 18,000 square feet. Dr. Detlef Knappe of NC State University, whose team of researchers found the PFAS contamination a few years ago, explains how this type of filtration works.
That's a process where contaminants that are in the water get absorbed, and absorption means that the chemicals that are in the water accumulate on the surface of the activated carbon. Activated carbon is pretty amazing material in the sense that a teaspoonful of that material has a surface area that's the size of a football field.
The basics. Water from the Cape Fear Public Utility Authority comes from the Cape Fear River. Most of it. Some does come from wells, which is filtered at the Richardson plant. From the river, the CFPUA grabs it. It pours into the existing filtration system. Before we all learned of Gen X and PFAS, the CFPUA already had a filtering process for the water that gets to the spigots of tens of thousands of residents and businesses. It starts with adding ozone gas, used to remove some of the organic material in the water. That's followed with flocculation. It's a process that causes unwanted destabilized particles to clump together and drop out. After getting the heavy material out, the water moves on to biological filters. It ends at the UV facility where ultraviolet light hits the water to disinfect and destroy viruses. Finally, add a bit of chlorine and the river water goes into the system as drinkable. Carl Vandermaiden is Deputy Executive Director of CFPUA. He says ozone, UV, and biofiltration are already considered advanced technology.
The unfortunate part is that none of those advanced treatment technologies can remove PFAS. And that's why we have to add an additional treatment process to what we already have to address the PFAS in our water.
He says the benefit of GAC is all that carbon can be recycled. After 400 days or so, each bed of carbon gets recharged, regenerated. Vandermaiden says GAC will be sent off-site to undergo a process where it's subjected to extreme heat, which destroys the PFAS that was absorbed while retaining the carbon. Regenerated GAC can then be returned to service with the same absorbent capacity as if it was new. The new system will cost CFPUA $46 million and then $2.9 million per year to maintain. Customers will pay for the new facility, although CFPUA is currently in litigation to force Chemours to eventually pay for all the costs. Across the river in Brunswick County, reverse osmosis is the name of the game. It's a lot more expensive.
Absolutely. And that's because there's a higher capital cost, there's a higher energy usage as well. When it comes to the entire treatment process, you have a lot of wastewater that you have to deal with one way or another.
That's Mike McGill, president of Water PIO. He used to work for CFPUA and also H2GO, the regional water utility that serves 11,000 customers in northern Brunswick County. H2GO is building a reverse osmosis facility for its customers. Besides being more costly, RO comes with something else, wastewater. Tom Speth is Associate Director for the Center of Environmental Solutions and Emergency Response at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency.
So about 20% of the flow into the plant, approximately, needs to be wasted and sent somewhere and permitted to be sent somewhere. And that's not an insignificant amount of flow. And right now for PFAS, there aren't a lot of treatment technologies.
Here's how it works. RO pushes the water through membranes made of polymers, dense material. It does this with a lot of water pressure. These membranes are able to stop the contaminants, sort of like they hit a wall and fall away. During this process, about 20% of the water falls away. It's very concentrated with PFAS compounds. It has to go somewhere. However, in the case of H2GO, which does not anticipate a utility increase to cover the project, there will be less wastewater. That's because H2GO will be drawing its water from deep well confined aquifers, not the river. Well water is cleaner than what's coming downstream. H2GO spokesperson Tyler Witkowski says any wastewater from the RO process is expected to have salinity approximately equal to seawater and is to be permitted and discharged into the Brunswick River. Meanwhile, for Brunswick County, the full expansion project at Northwest Water Treatment Plant, including the reverse osmosis system, will cost an estimated $137 million. The county has around 43,000 water customers. Brunswick County has a 3-year permit from the state's Department of Environmental Quality to discharge the RO wastewater back into the Cape Fear River. The county will monitor contaminant levels at the outflow under DEQ guidelines. While neither process is perfect, the experts say GAC and RO are good enough for the job at hand. Again, Detlef Knappe.
Both the Brunswick County residents and the Wilmington residents will benefit from cleaner drinking water through the installation of those technologies.
The CFPUA GAC plant is scheduled to be running in early 2022. H2GO has not yet finalized its timeline for their RO project. Brunswick County expects to be online in 2022.
And that was WHQR's Vince Winkle. We first aired that story last December, and we have an important update on that timeline. According to Port City Daily, a project addendum sent to prospective contractors in December, made public in early January, pushes back Brunswick County construction milestones for its RO project. It now appears the Brunswick County plant could come online as late as May 2023, which is 1 year later than first anticipated. But Gen X, as we've since learned, only represents a fraction of the water contamination. And earlier this year, we learned that Brunswick County has the most contaminated drinking water in the country, according to Environmental Working Group, a national nonprofit. Brunswick County officials released a statement on that report that says, in part, at this time, the EPA does not have an established health goal for several of the other compounds listed in the report, contributing to the overall 185.9 parts per trillion sample level. However, the PFOA and PFOS and Gen X sample levels in the report are also below provisional health goals due to the fact that little or no study has been done on the health effects of combined PFAS or many of these individual PFAS found in the source water. Brunswick County has taken a proactive approach to install the most protective water treatment system. Today, we're going to explore how far we've come on a number of fronts, including what we've learned about the impacts of these compounds on human health, what's changing, if anything, in the regulatory world, and how local leaders are adopting new technology to clean the water. With us on this exploration, Patrick Irwin. He's the Public Utilities Director for Dare County, which runs 5 water treatment plants. 4 of those are reverse osmosis. Patrick Irwin, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you very much.
Larry Cahoon is a professor at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, in the Biology and Marine Biology Department. He served as one of our resident community experts on this issue for the last 2.5 years. Larry Cahoon, thanks for being with us today.
Sure. Hi, Rachel.
And we're inviting you to join the conversation. What questions do you still have? Call us at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org during the live Wednesday discussion. Larry Cahoon, this EWG report that just came out that puts Brunswick County at the top of a national list for most contaminated drinking water. Put this report in perspective for us.
Right. The number that you quoted, the 186 parts per trillion of total PFAS, on the one hand, that's not good. For example, the most recent health guideline for PFOA, one of those legacy compounds, I believe, is 11 parts per trillion. I think the PFOA levels in Brunswick County water are below that, but I'm not sure. The good news here is that if you went back 3 years, you know, to early 2017, before we knew about this, those numbers were orders of magnitude higher, hundreds to thousands of times higher. So we've made progress in getting the pollution source cut way back.
Yeah, but it's still a concerning number. Yes. There's so much we don't know, which I'm going to ask you about when we come back from the break. But Patrick Irwin of Dare County, you started with reverse osmosis long before we were talking about PFAS. Why?
Well, mainly because of the fact that we don't have a Cape Fear River. We don't have a great source in Dare County. So our source was deep wells. And, of course, they were salty. And so we matched our treatment to our source. And we started the first reverse osmosis plant back in 1989. It's been there 30 years. And just now we are getting ready to train up to change out the three original million gallon a day trains. And then we'll be replacing them soon. So it's been a good source. It's been a good treatment for us because of our source.
And we're going to find out how that works when we come back from this break. You're listening to Coastline. It's a look at two water treatment processes local governments are using to decontaminate the drinking water. You can call us at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. When we come back from the break, we'll hear from some listeners. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. Listening to Coastline, I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today we're taking a look at what we've learned about unregulated chemical compounds in the Cape Fear region's water supply and how the two main water treatment methods that we expect to be effective, removing Gen X, PFAS, 1,4-dioxane, PFOAs, how those actually work. Patrick Irwin is the Public Utilities Director for Dare County, where they have four reverse osmosis plants in operation and one nanofiltration plant. Larry Cahoon is a professor of biology and marine biology at UNCW and has served as an expert on water quality issues in the region. You can ask your own question of our guests by calling us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138 or sending an email to coastline@whqr.org. And Patrick Irwin, just before we went to break, you were explaining why Dare County picked up the reverse osmosis process so early on. You're surrounded by salt water. And
yes,
you've said that it's been a very effective process for Dare County. But what about some of these, the downsides to RO, like the huge cost? How did you even plan for that financially?
Well, I mean, first of all, we had no choice. So we knew it was going to be, they knew it was going to be costly back in the late 80s. They had a softening plant that they had put in the late 70s, and it was a 5 million gallon a day plant, and it was already needed to be upgraded by the late 80s is the way Dare County grew so quickly. So that was when they didn't have enough fresh water. So, and that was in the, they were in the Upper Yorktown aquifer for that original plant, and that was fresh water. So then they didn't have enough fresh water, so then they went with the reverse osmosis to treat the salt water.
And I want to ask about the waste stream, too. But Jess from Wilmington called in and asked, what's being done to hold these industries accountable? Why do New Hanover and Brunswick counties have to pick up this tab? And Larry Cahoon, you've been part of this conversation since it started in 2017.
Yeah. This is in litigation. CFPUA has filed suit against Chemours and DuPont over this. Brunswick County's joined in that lawsuit. So has Wrightsville Beach, because one of their mainland wells that Wrightsville Beach uses has been contaminated through the aquifer by PFAS. So litigation is slow. Chemours and DuPont are putting up every possible barrier to resolving this case. They don't want to give us back the money. I say us because I'm a customer of CFPUA. And so we're going to have to, you know, we can't wait for litigation in order to get clean water out there. We're going to have to proceed. And as you said, you know, we're looking at 2022, 2023, and that's, you know, the litigation probably won't have been resolved by then. The nature of these cases, they can drag out for 10, 15 years.
And going back to what we know about the chemical load in the water at this point, there are substances in there, Larry Cahoon, that we haven't been able to identify.
Correct.
Is that right?
Most of the compounds that are in the water from the discharges from Chemours were byproducts coming out of various different process sections of the overall Fayetteville Works facility. A lot of those byproducts are strange compounds, and some of them apparently have not yet been identified as compounds that we previously knew about. They're unknown to science.
And so that means, what do we know about their...
We know essentially nothing about their toxicology, either single compounds or in mixtures. Only a few of those compounds have been studied that way. PFOA, PFOS, GenX to a slight degree. But the toxicology work is expensive, it's complicated, and it takes a very long time. And the unfortunate thing is we're doing this by epidemiology, which means we're using the human population as test subjects, looking at our exposures and the consequences for us in terms of health. And that's a horrible way to learn about these things. It takes a very long time, and we're victims.
Emily Donovan is co-founder of Clean Cape Fear. She's testified before Congress on this issue. And as we know, the Environmental Protection Agency has still not established standards, regulatory standards, for some of these chemical compounds. But she writes, because PFAS chemicals are considered forever chemicals because they don't break down after their intended use, how are utilities who use GAC, granular activated carbon, going to manage the disposal of the PFAS on their spent filters? Incineration has not proven to be a safe and viable method. Is this true? Larry Cahoon, what do we know about the disposal?
That's a good question. These compounds require extremely high temperatures for them to break down. The fundamental property of PFAS compounds is that you have a carbon-fluorine bond. And when those two atoms, carbon and fluorine, bond together, the bonds are extremely strong, which is what confers the properties that the manufacturers want. You know, Teflon, nonstick, doesn't, you know, pass water and that sort of thing. On the other hand, they don't break down in the environment under natural conditions. So with GAC, G-A-C, you've got a challenge to remove that stuff from the activated carbon and get rid of it by some extremely high-temperature thermal oxidation method. And thermal oxidation, by the way, is what Chemours is now using to control their air emissions. Very expensive, very difficult.
And we've heard that reverse osmosis also brings with it a pretty serious waste stream. Part of that is salinity, and part of that is whatever the contaminants are that you've removed from the water. So Patrick Irwin with Dare County Public Utilities, tell us about the waste stream in Dare County. you're surrounded by salt water already. Correct. So does the salinity level mean anything for the surrounding ecological systems?
Well, actually, the salinity level in some of the plants are less than the area that it is going to. For instance, the plant in Kill Devil Hills, the Dare County plant, Kill Devil Hills, goes to the Atlantic Ocean. And some of the other plants go to the Sound. And the salinity is less in most cases. But it is, all the reverse osmosis plants are 75% recovery plants, meaning that we do reject 25% of what comes in. Mm-hmm. But our nanofiltration plant is a coarser membrane. It doesn't treat to the further limit that reverse osmosis does, and then you only reject 15%. So if you can use a nano plant, it would be a lot less rejection. Mm-hmm. We use a nano plant to remove organics. You know, that's our main reason for that plant, mm-hmm. and it's a lot less costly. We found when we put the nano filtration plant in that the power increased to increase of $60,000, but the chemical treatment increase was reduced by $200,000. So that's the difference between nanofiltration and reverse osmosis. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit coarser. The pressures are lower.
Nanofiltration yes. wouldn't remove then things like Gen X, PFAS, these unregulated
no, not as well as
comments.
No, absolutely not as well as reverse osmosis. No.
That's right.
And first of all, these are unregulated, which I think is a piece of the narrative that's mm-hmm. been hard for a lot of people to get their minds around, which means you, as director of Dare County's public utilities, don't have to filter for these compounds.
No, we're not required like everybody else isn't required mm-hmm. to.
Right.
Because, yeah.
Do you test for them?
We do not. The PFAS network did come and test our wells for it. We haven't received the results yet, but we're confident that our reverse osmosis membranes will handle it.
Right, and this is one of the few kinds of technology right. that would right. take care of that if they were present in your yep. well water.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Larry Cahoon, can you help us understand why? And we have a few questions from listeners about this.
Yeah.
Eric from Wilmington asks, how are these companies allowed to continue to dump PFOAs and PFAS in the water? What law would prevent them from doing this?
Clean Water Act. The fact that these are not quote-unquote regulated means that the government has not done its job. That's the first comment. The second thing is that when a discharger puts materials of any kind back in surface waters of the United States, they're required by law to disclose what those things are and how much of them they're putting in. ChemWars did not do that with regard to Gen X or any of that other stuff. I've read their permits and their emission reports. They did not disclose that they were putting those things in the Cape Fear River.
Even if they had disclosed,
mm-hmm.
it would have been perfectly legal. Is that correct?
I'm going to defer that to the attorneys who deal with that sort of thing. But the fact that they did not disclose when they should have means they violated the Clean Water Act.
When we look at our water utilities, who, you know, in Patrick Irwin's case, mm-hmm. they don't have to test for PFAS and PFOAs. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you test for 1,4-dioxane? Is that part of the...
No, we do not.
And that's another, mm-hmm. that's known
right.
carcinogen
yes.
that we found in the local water supply as well.
And it's also not on the small list of regulated chemicals either. Some
so
of this
when is this going to be regulated if we know these things are toxic? And
at the current rate with the PFAS compounds, there's 4,000 of them. At the current rate at which the federal government is regulating these things, it'll be somewhere in the next ice age before they're regulated.
You don't have any faith that there's going to be any kind of federal regulation to come
down? Not real soon. And they haven't really issued regulations for PFOA. And we've known for 30 years this thing was toxic. We've known that. They've dragged their feet for a lot of different reasons, so I'm not going to get into all that. But The point is that the regulatory approach with these chemicals is simply not up to speed. They're not going to get the job done for us, and we have to look at other methods. There are other rules out there about how they behave, they being the chemical companies. And as I said, when they failed to disclose that they were discharging this stuff into the Cape Fear River, they broke the law, in my opinion. So, you know, we have to take every tool we have. And then you have the public. When the public became aware that we had a problem back in 2017, the public demanded action. That's why these things are being done. That's why the utilities are upgrading. That's why they're suing. That's why ChemWars is being made to stop doing this.
And Emily Donovan of Clean Cape Fear writes, is it true DuPont now invests in water filtration technologies like RO for residents concerned about DuPont profiting further off our region's PFAS contamination problem? How can we ensure our local utilities are not purchasing DuPont-owned equipment or supplies?
Well, I mean, DuPont's made membranes for years. Their FilmTech membranes have been out since the mid-90s. So I don't think it's a recent thing that they started making membranes.
You're listening to Coastline. Reverse osmosis and granular activated carbon are the most effective methods that we know of for removing chemical compounds such as Gen X and other kinds of PFAS from water. Today we're exploring the differences in the process, what we've learned about water treatment since 2017. Patrick Irwin is Public Utilities Director for Dare County in northeastern North Carolina. Larry Cahoon is a professor of biology and marine biology at UNCW and is a water quality expert. You can ask your own question during the live discussion on this Wednesday by calling us at 910-343-1138 or emailing us at coastline@whqr.org. David from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi. I just had a question. Why are we getting water out of a river when it seems like you could drill down deep water wells and get clean water that wouldn't need so much filtration?
Good question. Larry Cahoon, this is a local question.
Right,
so
right.
You want to take that one. Thanks so much for your call, David.
You know, there's probably several factors in there. The aquifers, to some degree, I mean, we're blessed by having both aquifers and a river. As you've heard from Pat Irwin here, Dare County had no choice. They had to go down and extract well water from aquifers, the freshest they could find, which wasn't real fresh. We have aquifers in the region. They have a limited capacity to support water production for a population the size that we have already, never mind the growth that's coming. The river has a much larger capacity, and it was relatively easy to tap into the river. And of course, we did that decades ago, long before we had any clue that all of these horrible things were being put into that water. We had no ability even to detect them when you go back 30, 40 years. And of course, the companies never said, oh, by the way, we're putting this stuff in the water. So the presumption was that standard treatment technologies would work and everything was fine. So here we are. There's a lot of history wrapped up in the answer to that question.
Jamie writes, out of fear for what was in the water here, I bought a home filtration system for over $1,200. Mm-hmm. The system uses four sets of filters enclosed in large plastic containers. These plastic containers are not recycled, but are instead thrown into the trash. Thus, more environmental destruction and contamination because of ChemWars. Is there a difference in the effectiveness? She's talking about a reverse osmosis system, I think, for a home. Okay. Which is different from the industrial scale RO process.
Right.
Is there any kind of effectiveness difference? People who are not waiting for Brunswick County or CFPUA to come online with their systems and are just installing, say, under sink RO systems?
Oh, no. Point of use systems are used anytime there is a problem in someone's water. Some people that have wells that don't have access to central water use them all the time. And if the point of use system is reverse osmosis system, that's going to tell you the type of removal of the membrane. That means it'll remove anything that a municipal system will.
Now, what are some of the pitfalls for individual homeowners who opt to go their own route?
Well, it's a great idea, but you got to maintain them. We have seen that there's some systems that our customers have, and we'll get a complaint that the water is horrible, and it's because they haven't maintained their own systems in their homes. So that would be one thing you'd want to look for sure. You want to get a maintenance agreement, and you have to monitor your water. You get yourself a TDS meter to make sure it's still working. That's
an easy thing. A TDS meter?
Total dissolved solids. You can get them right in, probably from Amazon. And that'll tell you how many dissolved solids are in the water and whether your reverse osmosis system is working.
But that also won't tell you if it's not filtering out the PFAS, for instance, right?
Well, yeah, TDS will go up.
Oh, it will?
Sure, yes. Sure.
It'll show up there.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Alan writes, are the purification processes used by local water bottling companies like Culligan and Crystal Springs able to rid the water of PFAS contaminants?
If they're using reverse osmosis, then yes. As Patrick has explained, reverse osmosis at this point is the very best way to get almost all of those things out of the water. You want to look for labeling that says RO, okay? Other than that...
And not all of those commercially available bottled waters are using RO.
Right. You know, when I shop at the store and buy bottled water, I'm looking for RO treated. You know, there's a lot of different kinds of water for sale out there. You do have to be a careful shopper.
When we first heard about this story, Dr. Detlef Kanapi, who was part of the team that discovered these compounds in the Cape Fear River, said that reverse osmosis was the most effective treatment for removing these kinds of chemical compounds like Gen X from the water. Is that still true? Is it better than granular activated carbon?
I think that the technologies for each of these systems are advancing rapidly. We're getting better and better at doing this for obvious reasons. There's tremendous demand.
And Larry Cahoon, I'm going to ask you to finish that answer when we come back from this break.
That's fine. I hear the music.
We've got Dare County's Public Utilities Director Patrick Irwin and UNCW Professor Larry Cahoon with us today. It's a look at reverse osmosis and granular activated carbon treatment processes for the drinking water supply. If you have your own question, call us during the live Wednesday discussion at 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Since residents in southeastern North Carolina learned their drinking water supply is contaminated by compounds that can't be removed with the technology currently in operation, New Hanover and Brunswick County utilities have launched projects to install granular activated carbon filtration and reverse osmosis capabilities. Today, we're looking at what we've learned since 2017 about these unregulated, potentially carcinogenic chemical compounds in the water supply, why different counties choose RO or GAC. Larry Cahoon is a water quality expert and a professor of biology and marine biology at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. Patrick Irwin is public utilities director for Dare County, which operates 4 reverse osmosis plants and 1 nanofiltration plant. You can ask your own question during this live Wednesday discussion by calling us at 910-343-1138 or sending an email to coastline@whqr.org. And Larry Cahoon, just before we went to break, you were explaining whether there is an effectiveness difference between granular activated carbon and reverse osmosis for removing PFAS.
Right. Bearing in mind that the two technologies, as I said earlier, are evolving rapidly, and getting better at these sort of things. Reverse osmosis is size selective, so it literally filters out all the molecules above a certain size, gets them all, okay? below that size, you know, very tiny things like water molecules, which are very small, they go through the holes in the membrane. GAC, granular activated carbon, works by a different principle. It's not really filtration in the same way. It's adsorption, where the chemicals of interest stick to the surface of the activated carbon particles. Some molecules stick more readily to carbon than others. And my understanding, and I stand to be corrected if possible, is that some of the smaller PFAS compounds do not stick as well to activated carbon as some of the larger ones, Gen X being a relatively larger one in this context.
And so GAC then would be very effective for Gen X.
It can be.
But not necessarily effective for another form of PFAS that were
some of the smaller molecules that are less well understood, their byproducts and so forth. My understanding.
So is it fair to say then that you're saying to be completely safe in terms of filtering out all the different varieties of potential toxins, RO is better? Is that what you're saying?
I think RO is better. Bear in mind that there are other considerations. Number one, the technologies are getting better. Number two, if you're talking about home versus utility scale, you've got professionals at utility scale monitoring these systems. RO is expensive compared to GAC. You cited earlier the costs of the plants that CFPUA is adding on the one hand and Brunswick County is building on the other. You're looking at a $100 million difference there for essentially the same volume of water. So money's a big factor.
I put that question to Jim Fleckner of CFPUA when this story first broke. This was a while ago now, and just asked about the financial consideration.
Yeah.
Because you could make an argument that you're either paying for it on the front end by filtering the water properly or paying for it on the back end by dealing with the illnesses that then bloom in a population because they're drinking contaminated water.
Right.
I mean, is that part of this consideration?
Well, that sounds nice in black and white. But given that we're trying to handle the compounds that we know the most about, Gen X, PFOA and so forth, as opposed to some of the things that we don't know anything about, and I'll spare you the fancy names for them, but some of the small things, we don't know anything about them. We suspect they may not be as dangerous as Gen X or PFOA because they don't stick around in your body. But again, we don't really have the toxicology. So we're being asked to make an expert decision about what technology to use right now, given that we don't know certain kinds of information. And so that's a tough call. Given that the GAC system that CFPUA is going to use for $46 million, I know that cost was a major concern. They had an engineering firm come in and advise them on the relative costs. And, you know, as things stand, it's the ratepayers who are going to have to pay for this until they prevail in court and make Chemours pay up. That's a long way down the road. Got to do something now.
And right. And all of those considerations make sense. It's not black and white. And it sounds like it's
black and white. It's
complicated.
Equation. We have been put in a very difficult position by Chemours.
And Rex from Wilmington asks, why are we getting GAC here and not RO? RO might be more expensive, but it sounds like it's better. He says, I'm tired of not getting the best here. We settle. Mm-hmm. But you're saying all these other considerations that you can't really make that determination.
Yeah. And I'm not defending one system or one decision by a utility over another. I'm trying to explain what the considerations have been.
Is it also true that CFPUA wouldn't be able to capture all the water that it needs to capture from the Cape Fear River to operate an RO plant? It doesn't have the capacity allotment to do that.
The capacities for the two different utilities, the big ones, are roughly the same, but RO does have an inefficiency. You don't get, as Patrick explained, 1 gallon of clean water for every gallon coming in. There's a ratio involved depending on the technology that you use, high pressure, low pressure, and so forth. And there are limits to how much water we can withdraw from the Cape Fear River. We're not there yet, but RO would make us take a big step forward toward that limit.
And that has to be part of the consideration.
It does. Mm-hmm.
What about the wastewater stream from RO? Patrick Irwin, you explained the salinity level in your wastewater from your RO plants in Dare County is actually less than the water that it's then pouring into on the ocean side or the sound side.
Yeah.
What about other contaminants in the water? You then have this concentrated contaminant stream that's going into the sound or the ocean.
Sure. You know, if they're coming from a deep aquifer, so if you're doing 75% recovery, you can multiply whatever you have in that by four. There are some, you know, we have iron. We don't have a lot in that deep aquifer, though. I mean, a lot of calcium carbonate and things of that sort. But you got to remember, we're 350 feet with a screen to 450 feet right in the Mid-Yorktown aquifer. There isn't any industry in Dare County that would contaminate that aquifer.
You been able to observe any kinds of changes in ecological systems where the wastewater is discharged? What has changed?
Well, we do toxicity testing, for one thing. That's part of your MPDES permit. And it's chronic toxicity. And we have been passing for the most part. We do have one plant that fails on occasion, and that's a plant that goes into the sound. That's in North Hatteras Island. Hard to say because of the type of testing that they do. It's mysid shrimp is what it is, and they go ahead and they take this fetal shrimp, basically, and they're, I think, 7-day-old juveniles, and they test the mortality rate of these, and that's our toxicity. I mean, it's a lot more involved than that, but that's the way I understand it. So it's a pass-fail test. So we do all of our plants have toxicity limits or toxicity testing on them. And of course, then when they renew our MPDES permits every 5 years, they go and they check all of our sampling of the previous 5 years and then add or take away. Right now, the plant in Killdevil Hills really is just testing for copper and arsenic, I think, as limitations on it. And there is some arsenic in the water in Dare County. The RO removes it, and we also have an arsenic removal system. That was kind of in the early 2000s, that was one of the problems we had that we had to treat for, because reverse osmosis only would take out the arsenate, not the arsenious acid, the solution of arsenic. So we went ahead and then we put in an arsenic removal system too, kind of just like was going on down here. That was our problem, and it's worked very well.
Larry Cahoon, do we have any idea, if we don't know what PFAS do to the human body over time, then we probably don't know what they do to organisms in the water where the contaminated waste stream would be released from an
RO
plant.
Yeah.
Any theories?
The toxicology work that has been done by both the industry and by other outfits typically relies on model animals that mimic humans to some degree, mice, rats. There even were some monkey trials that DuPont did with PFOA, and they found the monkeys died from the high dose they used. Yeah, the stuff killed the monkeys.
Wow.
In terms of the aquatic organisms, you know, they're not good matches for humans. Most of them are cold-blooded. They're very different biologically. There's been not nearly as much testing done in that way. I would guess that there has been some whole effluent toxicity testing done under certain circumstances, but that's a guess. I'd have to go back and look at the permits. And they were not interested in PFAS per se. None of the testing that might have been done by ChemWars would have reflected the PFAS contents. In other words, it was uncontrolled.
I want to get to, there are a couple of questions from listeners just about what can we do to take care of our own water. Richard asks, all this talk is mainly about RO being the premier tech. What about distillation or boiling the water? And why is this not an answer,
no,
Larry
no.
Cahoon?
Neither method really gets those compounds out of the water. Many of them are volatile. That is, they'll boil off with the water and they'll recondense. Boiling isn't going to do anything with those compounds. That's good for killing microbes if you do it right, but no.
And Rose from Wilmington asks, what's the best in-home solution? We just moved here from up north. Right. And I've gotten this question from a number of people who are new to the idea of the water supply having contaminants. Right. So the best in-home solution, Patrick?
Reverse osmosis.
Yeah, mm-hmm. reverse osmosis. You can get an under-sink system in your kitchen sink. You can also get a whole house reverse osmosis system.
The whole house systems are much more expensive. You're going to generate a lot more wastewater. And really, you know, why do you need to remove PFAS from your toilet water or your washing machine water? It's really drinking the water that matters. So an under-sink unit, which is much cheaper, is the way to go.
And when we look at, you brought in, Patrick Irwin, part of the reverse osmosis system. This is a membrane that we have sitting on the table in front of us. Can you describe what it looks like and how it works?
Well, sure. It's the membranes are in a reverse osmosis unit, you know, that of course removes the water. And in a municipal system, for instance, there are hundreds that are stacked back to back in what we call pressure vessels. But the membrane itself is a polyamide, you know, a type of plastic, and it is 8 inches in diameter. They're 40 inches long, and they're spiral wound, meaning that the membrane sheets are wrapped like a paper towel. So if you were looking at a paper towel, you could the raw water going into the membrane would go through the outside of the paper towel, and then only the purest water could go through the pores into what we call a permeate tube in the very middle of that 8-inch diameter membrane, and then that collects all the treated water. And then the in the case of the 75% recovery plant, 25% is rejected. It can never pass the membrane. Only the best water or the water molecules can pass that membrane. Everything else is rejected.
And Patrick Irwin, an interesting part of your career in public utilities has been having to adjust your processes, your testing, becoming compliant with more stringent standards as things evolve. Yeah. How are you planning for the future on that front? Do you expect standards to become more stringent, or do you, like Larry Cahoon, have no faith that the EPA will regulate anything? And Vince even asks, the administration is rolling back water regulations, so what does this mean?
Well, yeah, that was the federal regulations. I just saw that. Vince is correct there. You know, to tell you the truth, I don't think we'll see that. I don't know. But reverse osmosis does remove to a certain extent, most of the the regulations. As the regulations get stricter, the RO can take care of it. I mean, we're already prepared. For instance, for trihalomethanes, in 2003, they dropped the limit from 100 down to 80 ppb. And right now, with our RO membranes and our nano membranes, we have about 12 ppb. So they can drop to 60 to 40, and we already have that covered.
Larry Cahoon, you've also said there's a health advisory level of 70 parts per trillion, which is not a regulation. It's just, here's a number that you might want to look at.
Right.
But you think that's too high.
Yeah. The latest toxicology analyses that I saw performed by the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, ATSDR, suggested that the appropriate limits for PFOA and PFOS, the two legacy compounds, should be 11 and 7 parts per trillion, respectively. I think I've got the numbers right.
11
and
7?
Uh-huh, yeah.
As opposed to 70?
And you know, we're learning more about the toxicology of these things. It takes decades to get adequate toxicology work done, published, peer-reviewed, and all that. So it's not surprising that the standards come down.
And that's this edition of Coastline. Larry Cahoon, Patrick Irwin, thank you both so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks also to WHQR's Vince Winkle. Coastline's production team includes Rachel Keith, Ken Campbell, and Marissa Castrino. Coastline is a production of WHQR Public Media. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at WHQR.org, at the podcast, find it on the HQR app, or just tune in for the rebroadcast Sunday afternoon at 2. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. We'll be right back.